Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We welcome Mike Sando, a senior NFL writer for The Athletic, but also a former colleague of mine from way back. Mike, I was just talking about this on my show, but a lot of people expected, even predicted, that the football would be sloppy and messy because of no preseason, that there might even be a lack of timing and teams would be completely out of rhythm, maybe not tackling the way that they should. But what did you think of the overall quality of play as you watched the games unfold week one?
Yep, I think it was surprisingly good. I think, you know, there were a couple, you know, questionable calls here that I didn't think the officiating was horrific, you know, by bad officiating standards. To me, the only thing I was concerned about, I guess, was, okay, the atmosphere of the crowd in these tense moments. But I think you even sort of get used to that. And I thought the players played, you know, hard and all of that. So I was talking to a coach who was watching film of the Kansas City game after the Thursday night. And I said, well, watching the all 22, can you tell a difference from, like, you know, a regular game? And he's like, nope, couldn't tell at all. So,
wow.
You know, I think it's gone way better than I think this whole thing's gone way better than expected, from how few people are getting COVID while playing,
right,
to the quality of play, to my enjoyment of the games, to kind of the Twitter community during the games. You know, it's all been very fun.
You know, I established a new house rule on the show because I expected it would be sloppy and kind of messy, too, that if we have scores of 6-4 or 11-5, there's still no complaining in the first month because there was a real chance this might not happen. So I agree with you. As much as I love football, and this is a normal part of September, the fact that there was some real trepidation about whether or not it would move forward has made me not take it for granted in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and, you know, I was actually looking, I think through the Sunday games, I think the scoring was actually up from a typical week one, you know, offensive scoring was. So I don't think there's been a bunch of just garbage games. You know, I've really enjoyed. And when you look at the top quarterbacks, you know, I mean, Rodgers just on fire, right? You know, Mahomes looked good. Wilson on fire. You know, it's been pretty good.
So then what stands out to you? You mentioned Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, each with four touchdown passes. So both of those teams, Packers and Seahawks, put up a lot of offense. What else really struck you from week number one as we kind of launch forward now?
Yeah, you know, I think Kansas City's defense was really good. You know, and we all talk about the offense, but I thought that was notable early on that a team that's known for their offense and is probably the best team in the league. They're now adding a running back to the mix. You know, their defense, like I said, was dominant. So that stood out to me. I think Seattle changing their offensive approach. It's only one game, but they were much more pass happy, and Pete Carroll likes to sit on the football. So that was one thing I wrote about in my column for The Athletic on Monday was, hey, you know, maybe they're going to be a little more aggressive, and Pete sort of led on that they might. So, you know, that stood out to me. I didn't read too much into the big comeback by Chicago. I mean, I think it was nice, but it didn't really change like what we think of Trubisky. You know, I think Mitch Trubisky struggled for most of the game and we're not all suddenly believers. And I would think the last thing, well, too, Brady is going to need some time, I think, there. I think they'll be okay. And the other thing was just a disappointment of Carson Wentz. You know, I just feel like he's so highly thought of, you know, in personnel circles. People are just itching to kind of push him up among the elite. But 8 sacks, throws 2 picks, and they can't beat Washington. That's disappointing to me.
How much of the 8 sacks was on Carson? Because he is a guy that likes to be mobile, except that he was under siege.
Yeah. He was. And, I mean, certainly it was a less than ideal situation. So we have to split that among play calling, offensive line, him. But I just feel like he is always going to go down swinging. You know what I mean? And he doesn't he's just like a boxer who wants to try to knock you out in the first round. Sometimes you just have to throw your jab and make it through a few rounds and maybe win a decision, you know. And I think he he has a tendency to risk the bad play. And against a team like Washington, they didn't need to score that many points, you know, if they would have just not turned over the ball and that sort of thing. So that stood out to me. In a division, too, like the NFC East, where I don't think Dallas is that great. Some people do. I don't. I think that division could be taken by somebody if Philly could get it together.
I feel like that division is always this way. It is marked by just barely above average play.
Yeah, and people always put their hopes in the talent of the Cowboys. And I'm like, maybe Jerry Jones is a master marketer, because I just don't know that teams ever really overcome not great ownership. And I think Jerry Jones is a great owner for, you know, in business and all that. But I mean, I think he makes it hard for the coach to coach the team. And it's a major reason why they always just sort of disappoint, you know. I feel like they're in that mold again this year, but yet Vegas has their win total at 10. People talk about them all during the what used to be the preseason, how good they're going to be. I don't feel it.
Mike Sando is a senior NFL writer with The Athletic, has been covering the league since 1998, joining us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. On Monday night, the early game, we had a chance to see Ben Roethlisberger back after nearly a year. Three touchdown passes, and there were flashes of the old Big Ben, like the Big Ben in his prime. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that was really great to see for them, you know, because really statistically, and Ben said this after the game, you know, he felt like this was as good a defense as he's played with. And I know I was just going back before the season and looking at how good they were statistically. And last year they were as good as they've been since like maybe 2008. It goes a little under the radar because, you know, they were so bad at quarterback. And I think they've lost some explosiveness on offense, whether or not Ben's there. But if he comes back, I think we saw tonight, he's going to be at least, you know, average to above average quarterback. Maybe on his best day, he's going to be great. I think it makes him a factor.
We had one game specifically inside the AFC North with the Ravens and the Browns. And once again, the Browns start out where they set the bar really low. Sometimes I feel like they're clowning us. But we did see the Ravens come out the way that essentially they left off before their playoff loss, with three touchdown passes and really the ability to control the ball when they want to. How would you evaluate that division when you think Ravens, Steelers, and the Browns that have a lot of talent but a brand new head coach, and then Joe Burrow and the Bengals kind of rebuilding?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see those two bottom teams challenge the top two. I think there's an outside chance Pittsburgh could overtake Baltimore. You know, I just don't necessarily think that's probable. It's funny, Cleveland, since the start of last season, Cleveland owns the most points scored against Baltimore, 40 last year in September, and the least, 6 this year. So they're going to be an up-and-down team. You know, I do like kind of the stabilizing force of Kevin Stefanski. I think he's going to be much steadier than Freddie Kitchens, but he's a first-time coach with no off-season, with a long way to go in putting together, you know, a team. And we don't know if he's even a good head coach, right? I mean, I like what he's about, but is he going to be any good? And meanwhile, you've got Tomlin, who's been there forever. Harbaugh's been there forever. You know, I think forever with good rosters and good quarterbacks is going to win you the division. And those other two teams are trying to figure it out. And I think you just hope that what you saw at the end of the Cincinnati game, where Joe Burrow moved him up and down the field, is the future, and that they can grow around him. Yet, look at that organization, right? It always sort of only rises to a certain level, no matter how good they make everything else, you know, from a personal standpoint.
Where does that leave New England then? Because they've got a coach who's been there forever, and they have a couple of pieces who've been there for a long time. But there's a lot of turnover because of free agency, because of opt-outs, obviously Cam Newton as their new QB. So where do they fall in the AFC hierarchy?
Yeah, I don't think they can push, you know, even necessarily to win a playoff game unless they really drew a bad team. I do think they have a chance to win that division. You know, I would probably on paper go with Buffalo, but I think we saw, even with good statistics, passing stats yesterday, you know, Josh Allen's a little bit of a roller coaster, and the ball's coming out and he fumbles early in the game, fumbles a couple times. You know, you do that against better teams, you're going to be just like they were in the playoffs. They're not going to win a playoff game. So I think New England can hang around, but I don't think, you know, the 15 running plays for Cam Newton is a sustainable formula over the course of the season. I was actually kind of shocked that they ran him that often. I thought Miami was horrific. Couldn't even get any hard shots on him. They go to Seattle this week. Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner. You know, I think I'll be interested in seeing if that approach can work, because in the absence of that approach, having to open it up and throw the ball, I don't think they have the personnel to do that and be explosive enough and change field position and put up points. And New England hasn't really for the last year and a half, even when Brady was there.
Julian Edelman becomes even more critical, or at least as critical as he was when he was Tom Brady's security blanket. Mike Sando is with us from The Athletic, covering the NFL after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We've had already some significant injuries. The Dallas Cowboys reporting some. The Packers, of course, the Broncos had already lost Von Miller, and they're without Cortland Sutton. So when you look around some of the injuries that have popped up in the last week or so, which ones do you think will be the most impactful?
Well, I've really paid attention to Philly, you know, and some of those, you know, they weren't all during the game. Some of them before. I just think when you start out down a couple of offensive linemen, you know, and there's another team that's escaping me in my mind right now. I think, you know, Dallas was down, you know, down a tackle. Oh, and Denver's down, you know, a right tackle.
Right.
I think that really catches up with you over the course of a season. There's in a game, you know, you're going to have seven of those guys active sometimes, you know? And so I know they have the expanded practice squads, but there's just not enough of them to go around. So when you get down to your third and fourth tackle and have to play, you know, a significant number of games, I think it catches up to you.
And you mentioned the practice squads and the depth and the fact that rosters are smaller. How confident are the people inside the NFL that you've spoken to about whether or not the league can actually do this for 17 full weeks and the playoffs?
I think way more confident than like a month ago, right? I mean, I just felt like there's no way. And they weren't going to have a true bubble like the NBA did. And there's more players on the rosters. And you would just think that people would be coming down with it and spreading it to their team. And it may happen, but it just doesn't feel like it's even a risk of being out of control. So they must be doing a great job. And, you know, more power to them. I think all of us who love football want them to be able to play as safe as possible, and got so much enjoyment out of week one that, you know, why can't it happen in week two, right? Why can't it happen in week three?
You had a chance to attend a Seahawks scrimmage where there weren't any fans in the stands. And I know they're pumping in crowd noise, and it varies based on what network you're watching or what radio station you're listening to. But inside the stadiums, it's supposed to be staying at this steady 7 decibel level. A friend of mine described it as being inside an airport. But what did it sound like to you when you were inside CenturyLink and it was empty?
Yeah, it was actually a mock game. So they came out of the locker room and they had the national anthem and everything, you know, for the game. And it was kind of surreal to me because even in the press box, we were socially distanced, right? So I'm sitting in the press box. I have a mask on. There's, instead of being sitting on, you know, on top of each other with people everywhere and you're afraid of spilling someone's coffee when you wheel around with your elbow, you know, there's really, you could have brought like your nieces and nephews and they could have had coloring books out, right? There was that much room. And it just seemed like there were so few people in the press box. And of course, no one in the stands is completely different. I was actually talking to people who were at the games, you know, front office type people, and they said they could totally hear people on the sideline, you know, and the quarterbacks and all that. So I think it's totally different from a TV standpoint. It's not as different as I thought it would. You know, I think there's a big gap between what it is on TV, trying to make it be what we're used to, versus in the stadium where it's hard to fake it.
A couple of things that jumped out at me, reaction from Sunday. One was Sean McVay saying that not only could he hear his own guys up and down the sideline and what they were saying on the field, he could actually hear reaction on the opposite sideline. So it wasn't that loud inside the stadium that they couldn't hear everything. And then something else that I thought was interesting, too, I think it was Chris Collinsworth that mentioned it, is that it's odd to hear a snap count. If you're a receiver lined up wide, you normally don't hear the snap count inside a stadium, unless, of course, the fans have really quieted down, but that you're going more about the rhythm as opposed to actually hearing what your quarterback is saying.
Oh, yeah. So, like, watch the Green Bay game. Aaron Rodgers got Minnesota to jump twice on third down, and on one of those, I think it might have been the one where they completed the deep pass down the right side. If you watch before the snap, all of the receivers out to the side have their heads turned back. They're, like, listening to Rodgers read him a bedtime story, you know, and Rodgers has got like full command of everything, and he makes that poor defensive tackle who's just trying to be in the starter's blocks, don't jump. And he's just toying with them, and he gets the guy to jump, and the receivers take off on time. They press down the field and go. They complete a pass. It was almost not fair.
Well, yeah, true. And he was picking on their younger cornerbacks as well, the Vikings' younger cornerbacks. We're just getting started. We'll see how this plays out since it's just mid-September. But you can find Mike on Twitter at SandoNFL. He's a senior NFL writer for The Athletic. And we go way back from our days at a previous network. So it's good to catch up with you again, Mike. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thanks for thinking of me, Amy, and have a good week, too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.